Good morning, everybody.
It's good to see you guys. My name is David Knipe, and I teach in the Bible department here. Let me welcome y'all. So this is DJ Bowles. We'll tell you a little bit more about ourselves in just a moment. As you can tell, neither one of us is Brandon Thomas. You may have come to see him, but you may have seen in the news bulletin last night that we're going to be filling in. He's not able to be here this morning, but we are still keeping the topic. We don't have his notes, so this is not us sort of pretending to be him. We're going to be sharing the things that we have on this topic. Let's start by just telling you a little bit about ourselves and how we connect with church worship and especially instrumental worship. You want to start off, DJ?
Yeah, good to see you this morning. My name is DJ Bowles. I am the worship minister for the Riverside Church in Coppell, Texas. I do a lot of music writing and arranging for churches and consulting with churches all over the country on worship and worship leadership, and finishing up my doctorate in church music and doing a lot of doctoral research into worship transitions in Churches of Christ since 1960. So this is kind of my bailiwick and a passionate area of research, important developments in worship in Churches of Christ since 1960. So that's what urged them to call me, I guess, to come and be part of this discussion with you all this morning.
And like I said, I'm David Knipe. I teach here at ACU, and I teach church history and worship classes. I have, at this point, about 25 years of experience leading worship. I grew up in a cappella church, and so started with the youth Sunday night kind of services, and was beginning to lead regularly in an a cappella setting from about the age of 16. But just as kind of the way life has gone in different places I've lived, my wife and I have been a part of three different congregations that used instrumental worship. One of them was when we lived overseas in a place where there were not Churches of Christ. We found a little kind of good Bible church kind of place, and they used instruments. When we lived in Indiana, when I was in graduate school, our church had been a cappella for 50 years and had begun to really do a lot of neighborhood outreach. And up there, most people's church background was Catholic and Lutheran, and so they a cappella singing just did not really connect with them at all. And so we began to use instruments, and since I'd been in the band and things, I began to play as part of that worship band. And then now we belong to the Highland Church of Christ here, where 2 years ago we began to use instruments in an instrumental service parallel to an a cappella service on Sunday morning. And so I get to teach about worship, but I've also gotten to have a lot of really diverse experience both participating in and leading instrumental worship, doing some of that transition stuff that DJ's talking about. So our plan today, we're going to kind of bounce back and forth based on our the questions you guys have, the comments, the things we're going to talk about, and sort of where we fit in the discussion.
I guess it'd be good to kind of get a feel for you all. We want this to be resourceful to you, helpful to you, for your context where you are this morning. So I guess I'd just kind of like to get a feel for the room and kind of see maybe where you fall into one of these groups. Maybe you're just here to get tweetable material. I don't know. But maybe you're here looking for practical hacks for how to do instrumental worship better. Anybody fall in that category?
I'm just going to do a show of hands. If that's what
you don't have to limit yourself to one group.
Yeah.
How many of you are thinking about or interested in items related to making a transition to instrumental worship?
A couple of those. Okay.
Anybody just interested in hearing about how some churches do instrumental models? Yeah?
Wow.
And maybe you're also interested in planning resources for instrumental worship. Yeah, it's okay to not be limited to one group, because all of these sort of work together.
Okay. All right, so it looks like our last two are the ones we want to focus on, just kind of based on starting off. That's all right.
Cool. How many of you are in exclusively a cappella churches right now?
Exclusively?
Exclusively, Doyle. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. At least on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I in my experience, I've been leading worship full-time for about 15 years. in churches in Texas and in Georgia. Most of my time on staff at those churches are been when we are doing a cappella worship. We have begun making transitions toward instrumental at a couple of places that I have served. The church I'm in right now, we are a cappella on Sunday mornings. I'm assuming that for some of you, maybe you have youth group things where you're having a band, or you bring a band in for special occasions, or maybe you join with other churches in your community and you have opportunities for instrumental worship there. Anybody fit in that category? Yeah, kind of. I'm just curious, where are you guys at? Yeah,
me?
Where are you guys from?
We're from Fort Worth, Alta Mesa Church in Fort Worth. So yeah. We have an a cappella service.
And an instrumental service. Raymond Schultz still at Alta Mesa?
Sure is.
Cool. Can I just get a geographical feel for the room where you're from? Do you mind?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Fort Worth?
Abilene.
Big Spring.
The big metropolis of Big Spring. I love it.
Amarillo.
Just now, McKinney, but...
McKinney by way of Fairfax, Virginia, and Pennsylvania.
Dallas.
Dallas.
Will's Point.
Hey! Ask me about a Will's Point story afterwards. It's a band camp story. It's even better.
DFW.
Allen, Texas.
New Braunfels.
Thank you for saying that correctly. I hate it when people say New Braunfels. Drives me crazy.
Bernie,
outside of San Antonio.
Also German.
Bernie?
Coppell.
So just to give you a little historical before we step into that question. The first churches of Christ to add instrumental worship formally to their assemblies and tell the world about it was around 1998. Okay? That started in the late 90s. There were about two or three churches that kind of all did that around the same time. But over the course of the last almost 20 years, you know, well over, it's hard to put a number on this because we don't keep up with each other very well, and we don't play nice and talk to each other like we should. But there are probably over 150 congregations with sizable numbers on Sunday morning that do an instrumental service of some kind. But in thinking about a couple of case studies that we'll use for our time this morning, we're going to talk about, in some point, we'll talk about churches that have been doing instrumental worship since 98, since 2002, since, like David mentioned, 2014, 2015, and 2005. Well, we'll talk through those in a minute. But let's get back to, I went on a tangent there, and I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Let's get back to those last two items.
Okay. Yeah, so we talked about the questions you guys most connected with were some of the models on how it's done and some of the planning resources. We talked about models, right? There are just ways that churches do things, right? You guys are probably familiar. There are some churches that have, as we've mentioned here, the parallel a cappella and instrumental services, right? So if you have two services going on, you have to decide which of you want to make the early one the a cappella or the late, you know, how are you going to work that? Some churches will try to make those services as similar as they can, because you guys can probably guess when churches have those congregations, there are a lot of people who don't really have strong opinions about instrumental music. They may be surprising if you have them or if you think everybody else does. My experience has been lots of people say, you know, really, I trust the leaders. If this is what we really feel like is best, I'm just concerned about the other people in the church. You know, I don't want to make this a place that's difficult for them to come. So one way that people will address that is to have two parallel services as identical as possible, if not identical, one with instruments and one without, right? A second way of doing that is, again, to have the a cappella and instrumental where they are quite different, maybe except for the sermon, right? One of the things that, especially if you have a musical background, you have probably sensed is that there are some songs that just work better a cappella or instrumental. A lot of songs that we sing nowadays are ones that were written as part of kind of the contemporary Christian worship music scene. Those don't always translate well to being sung a cappella, especially if you try to arrange it exactly like you hear on the radio, just because of the way contemporary music is written. Now, what's great is we have amazing arrangers like DJ and others who do a lot of work to make those congregationally friendly. But if you're just thinking, hey, we like this song on the radio, we want to sing it like we hear, doesn't always work well. And so some churches will have a certain set of songs that they're doing around, say, the theme or the text or the sermon in the instrumental service, and then a different set on the a cappella side.
He makes a really good point. There are a host of churches that have made the transition from a cappella to instrumental because they don't have the resources to do it vocally a cappella. Mm-hmm. Purely practical considerations have been driving this conversation since the 1860s. There's a church in rural Kentucky, 1866. Let me tell you, the singing was bad at this church, and a minister named Lewis Pinkerton gets up in front of his church on a Sunday morning and says, "Brethren, the singing has become so bad that not even the rats are attending our services." The next Sunday, they had an instrument. And I just piggyback off that to say it was a practical consideration that drove them to make that change. They wanted to foster participation. They wanted to foster engagement from the people in their pews and let it not be something that drove people away so that it could draw people in. So a lot of practical considerations drive this conversation as well.
Absolutely. Another model that some churches use, if we're thinking of the a cappella instrumental blend, right, which is especially in Churches of Christ, that's one of our primary interests, is to do what sometimes people will call a blended service. Blended is a word that has a little bit of baggage in worship conversations because it began to be used back in the 90s as a way to address a different worship fight, mm-hmm. which was, do we use mainly old songs or new songs, right? Hymns or contemporary stuff, the stuff my grandmother grew up singing or the stuff that I hear on the radio. And so there was a guy, a really influential thinker named Robert Weber, recently deceased, who said, surely there are ways that we can actually work together. And so he proposed a thing called blended worship, where you try to do some of both. Eventually, over time, in some places, that kind of ended up being quotas. You know, well, as long as we have three hymns and three contemporary songs, then we're going to do that compromise thing where nobody ends up happy. And so that's a word that sometimes people get a little kind of sideways about. But people will sometimes use that term to mean, can we have a service where we do some songs a cappella and some with instruments? And there are churches that are doing that. And in some places, it works really well.
And I'll say, of the research that I'm doing on our churches, this is the smallest group of churches in my experience. Your experience may be different with that.
I think
outside of the Bible Belt, it's just difficult. I haven't seen this model done with, you know, success, saying, look at the way we do it, this is a great model for other churches to use, or else I think we would see it a lot more.
Right.
It's hard to blend the two together, just like each of these other models have their own difficulties as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of that is related to another angle that you could take on what are the models people use, is what is the model of music, right? Another way of saying that would be, how big and how diverse is your musical team, right? At Highland on Sundays, we typically have a music team that consists of 10 to 12 people, right? That's a lot of stuff up on the stage, right? And my experience is, right, the bigger the team, in some ways, it's just easier to go ahead and do the whole set, whatever it is that you're doing with that team. The places that I've seen do the more blended style is where it's very stripped down. Just maybe one to four instruments. My in-law's church in East Texas, a little small Church of Christ.
Will's Point, is it?
It is not Will's Point. They have just a little small group, and they sit off on the side. So if you're looking at the front of the church, there is a singing team that sits in chairs behind the singing leader, and they sing. And when they added instruments a few years ago, all they did was add a few instruments. Instrumentalists off to the side. And so it's very sort of discreet. It's very non-invasive in some ways. But it makes it where it's really easy for them to just set things down because they're not a visual focus.
Yeah.
And they're not really an auditory focus either.
And before you can even get to that place, though, David, I think you have to take another step back and ask yourself, if you're making this transition, you have to decide what's your style going to be. What's your sound? What is our musical approach going to be? Are we going to go Wren Collective and go Irish folk? Are we going to go Eagles and have 77 guitars?
Bluegrass.
Are you going to go bluegrass? Are you going to go with a more traditional rock approach? Electric, acoustic, bass? Are we going to go live drums? Are we going to go synth drums? Are we going to go pads on keys? Are we going to go tracks? You know, we want to go instrumental, but we don't have all the players, so we're just going to play tracks behind us and sing on top of the tracks. There's a host of levels to this conversation that you got to have before you ever get to day one. Before there's ever a launch, there's lots of questions to be asked.
And I'll say for me, having experienced it in a number of ways, one possible response to that comment is fear. Like,
yeah.
If you want to do some of these things in your church, because it can seem overwhelming, all the different decisions that I have to make. But another response, I think, is that there can be some freedom.
Yeah.
Because despite what you might think in visiting some churches and watching stuff like Chris Tomlin concerts or the Hillsong movie or whatever, there really are lots of different ways to do instrumental worship. It does not all have to be the same thing, even though sometimes it can look like that. One version I saw, our church in Germany that we went to, it was like I said, they were not a Church of Christ, but it was the freest church instrumental worship I've ever seen, because they had the music team, which consisted of a whole bunch of volunteers, and every month they would post the schedule of who was going to be playing each Sunday, and the congregation never knew what it was going to be. One week it would be a father and his two kids on a little string trio with a violin, viola, and a cello. One week it would be a piano and a saxophone. One week it'd be a guitar and one of those recorders that you played in third, but like kind of a nice one. They actually didn't decide on their style.
Yeah.
The music team picked songs and just whatever the instruments were that week. Now, that's an outlier.
It's true. That's true.
I have only seen that there, but it was extremely decentralized in terms of its worship planning.
Yeah, and most churches that make this move are going to decide on a core of instruments that will remain the same from week to week. We know that we're going to have somebody on keys. We know we're going to have somebody on a drum of some kind, whether that's a cajon, which is the very popular drum that's just a box you sit on and kind of play between your legs, you know.
Yeah.
And that was, we kind of did that at the same time.
Very nice.
synchronized faux cajoning.
Amazing.
I forgot where I was going with this altogether. Acoustic.
Acoustic.
Probably going to have some form of acoustic. And then beyond that is what changes from week to week. In other words, our core sound is going to be from this. The corpus of what we're doing is going to center around that from week to week, and we adjust from what our needs are for a given song.
Yeah. Question, comment?
Actually, I just finished a year in Pennsylvania at a Christian Missionary Alliance church.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that model
really was
well done.
Mm-hmm.
Their music minister was a professional musician. His wife played for the Philadelphia Philharmonic.
Wow.
And yet, every Sunday it was a different team. Had a different style.
Yeah.
And I spent the year just kind of exploring, because I had never been in that kind of environment, and listening to people and their comments. And it was everything from, we love it, to, we don't like it, but we'll wait till next week because you know it'll be different.
Mm-hmm.
It was all, everybody though was welcoming of it. And it was just so well done. So I think it was nice that he used the different talents that were available and kept it mixed up. And it was wonderful.
It's very reminiscent of the rotating song leader model we use in Churches of Christ up to, you know, the 60s, 70s in bigger churches that a lot of smaller congregations still use. We know that when Brother so-and-so leads, one week it's going to be a particular style, and the next week it's going to be different, and the next week it's going to be different, and so on and so forth.
Well, and then just the idiosyncrasies, right?
Right.
When one guy leads, you're going to sing all the verses of all the songs. When a different person leads, well, you don't know about the verses, but they're all going to be Stamps Baxter, right, or new song, you know, or whatever it is. And actually, I grew up in a church with a rotating preacher model that way, and we had one of our guys, he would say that very thing. He was kind of a storyteller preacher, and he would say at the beginning, now, you know, if you're visiting here, this is what we do. So if you don't like what you hear, just come back next week, and it'll be somebody different. We kind of joke about it. But you guys can imagine, right? Think about what DJ was saying about having that core sound, not necessarily a core team of people, but a core group of instruments. You can probably imagine what some of the pros and cons are of that type of setup, right? What are some of the advantages that you can imagine just right off the bat in your mind to having sort of that model of doing instrumental worship? What helps the church? Yes, ma'am.
More people can be involved.
Yeah, potentially more people can be involved. As you said, these are our instruments, but we're not restricting it to one group of people. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, no surprises, right? And there are some personalities in church that don't like surprise. Life is unsteady and unstable enough as it is. Church is a place where I can come and just have comfort because God is a solid rock and church can be a solid rock for me. Yep.
One thing that I've observed in the last 3 years is that I have...
Go ahead. I'll ask you in a minute.
Okay. Is that I have children. I sort of come to the way I've rationalized. I speak a cappella, my kids speak instrumental. Mm-hmm. And so, if you know, I can come to the point of having, I have two services for those of us who speak a cappella,
right,
and then a service for those of us who speak instrumental.
Sort of a bilingual approach.
That's right.
Yeah.
We wouldn't question if we were going to have a Spanish language service second, but when we start having an instrumental language service, we have people leaving every which way. But it seems to me that you have loud, and you have accompaniment type styles. One of my children is to go to a community church. They're in a old shopping center, so it's a low
storefront,
and they have a loud band.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you almost have to, it is so loud you can't hear anybody singing,
right.
And if the band becomes a performance, and I understand the criticism of some people. But you go to Highland where you have a bigger thing, and y'all's is much more of an accompaniment style of instrumental.
Yeah. Well, and that's another way that we could slice the, what are the different models? I was hearing somebody observe just yesterday, this is probably an overgeneralization, but you know, a lot of times those have some truth in them, that, a lot of times, churches of Christ that begin to use instruments so value the vocal aspect of our worship, and they want to make sure they preserve that. So my home church, a few years back, they began to use instruments. Now, if you go there, they have soprano, alto, tenor, bass singing on mic, along with a small kind of coffee house style band. And they mix the sound in a certain way that you really want to be able to hear the voices. So my friend was observing a lot of churches of Christ, the band part is not as loud compared to the singing, but in a lot of non-Churches of Christ, the experience is much more often the band part leads, the vocals are kind of subsumed under that, and the rationale is often because lots of people that don't grow up in vocal-heavy places feel anxious about hearing their own voice. And so hearing the band loud makes them more able to sing because they're not feeling, and I see some of you young guys kind of nodding at me here. Yeah, I mean, that it actually can free us for worship, right? And that speaks to different backgrounds.
But that's so foreign to so many people who've grown up in Churches of Christ where we learn from a young age, let it rip.
Yeah.
Vocally, you know, put it out there, let it go, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
You know, on the flip side of that, you have somebody who's been in an a cappella Church of Christ all their life and they feel drowned out, like their voice doesn't matter. And so it's that tension. You said something that made me think about this too. As an arranger, you know, 99.99% of the songs that we arrange that are being recorded by groups like Zoe and others are from, you know, Christian worship music.
Right.
You know, when we take, I'll speak for me, I can't say when we, when I'm taking a song and arranging that a cappella, my goal, when I put that on paper to be sung by my congregation, is that if you were to take that chart and put it on top of the instrumental chart, that there's no whiplash.
Right.
The goal is that there's compatibility between the two.
But they're not identical.
Yep. They're going to be, you know, breaks and solos and, you know, rhythm breaks and things like that that we wouldn't do a cappella because it would just be silent. But it's important that we have things that we hear on the radio that would bring them into worship, that they can sing right along just like they've sung them.
Right.
In their cars or whatever, and they lay on top of each other well.
And some of you guys may be thinking, but that, I don't know how I feel about that. If you have some anxiety about that, I'd tell you, do a little research on where Stamps Baxter songs come from. Right? Stamps Baxter songs were mass media in the 1930s. And people would go to conferences and learn those and bring them back to congregations. It's kind of funny. We've been doing the mass media transfer to congregations longer than we think. Let me finish that comment, and maybe we can talk about some of those case studies.
Sounds good.
The one about having that core sound, right? So advantages, you can bring more people in because you sort of know what you're already doing. There's some security, some consistency there, right? And I think, honestly, for leaders as well, it makes it easier to choose songs. Right, because if I'm so where I lead right now, a little neighborhood ministry that's connected with Highland, I lead solo with my guitar. It is a little small group. There's about 40 of us typically on a Wednesday, and I pick songs that are going to work well with just me on a guitar. There are some songs that don't work as well for that, and that's okay, right? But on the other side, right, you can also imagine there are some things that get lost, right? If you have a core sound, if you have a set group of instruments and you're a little too tied to that, what happens when the high schooler who loves Jesus, loves music, plays in the orchestra, plays in the band, and wants to contribute at church and really feels like God is calling them to use their gift for the sake of the congregation, and they say, I would like to use my bassoon in worship? You know, if you're a little too tied to that one side, then boy, I'd like to do that for you, but I can't even really envision how to do that, right? And you can also probably guess, sometimes people won't even ask, right? It's that phenomenon that we know of with when young women grow up in churches that are led by exclusively men. Many young women learn, they don't even think to ask. Or if they think to ask, they don't ask, can I participate? Because they don't see themselves up front in the person of other people, right? And so there are benefits to having that core sound, that consistency, but there are also some things that can be potentially lost. And so, again, that's another tension, right? How you have get the practical benefit of consistency, but also being sensitive and open and, you know, open to the possibility of diversity and using the diversity of gifts that exist in your church. And it's hard. There's not one sort of perfect answer.
The other beautiful thing about that is, from a surely practical side of the music minister in a situation like that, where it's somebody, you know, you just, here's your chart. I don't have to write your part for you.
Right.
Here's the chart. Feel it out. We're all going to play E at the same time.
Yeah.
Or this, or this, or whatever. And that universality of the chart makes it easy to add a host of giftedness to invest in them. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, and the challenge, some of y'all may know, if you've been in band or orchestra, you know about this, that if you want to play an E, some instruments, you just play an E.
Concert pitch.
I grew up playing oboe. I play an E. But I have siblings that play the saxophone. You play a different note to make it sound like an E. It's very strange, and I kind of wonder, why can't we not change the names to make this similar? But kids that grow up playing trumpet or saxophone or clarinet, you have to do this thing called transposing that creates time and work for the music minister.
That's true. But let's talk about resources before we jump into the case study.
Sounds good.
Let me just walk you through a few of these. These may be helpful to you. You may know about these. You may not. Helpful resources. I'm just going to walk you through. Oh, boy.
That's good. It takes a moment.
Adjusting. Oh, there's Robert Shaw.
Do you have a double?
Yeah, I have it turned on to funky display mode. Yeah. We should all salute. Cool, so I'm just gonna walk through about five of these things that I know are helpful to worship guys who are in bilingual contexts. I like that, both and context. The first of these, is a website called Beyond Sunday Worship, a guy named David Santisteven. This is a great website. It comes with a podcast that you can listen to each week with great resources. There are also resources on this site for learning worship keys, for learning how to use synthesizer and pad and things like that that are helpful resources. That's davidsantisteven.com. This is a great new website that Shane and Shane are doing. Shane Bernard and Shane, not Bernard. Shane Bernard leads worship at Watermark Church in Dallas-Fort Worth, right on your doorstep. They do a thing on Tuesday nights called The Porch, where he leads. But this is a sort of all-inclusive site that allows you to build a set list, pick charts for different instruments, learn how to play guitar, learn how to play keys, transpose different keys for different charts. Great website, kind of all-inclusive. Devotional stuff as well. Great stuff for worship leaders in any context. This is a site called The Worship Vault. Very similar. I'm not a member of this one, so I can't log into this one. Sorry. Worshipvault.com. This is a site called Worship Artistry. This is a new one to me. This is one that comes with plugins for your synth and for your guitar. Worshipartistry.com. Same thing, also charts, overviews on how to play charts, how to play drum beats. There's actual loops there for you. Tracks, if you want to download clip tracks and things like that, already built for you there. This is a site called Collaborate Worship. It also has pads and loops and tracks. But the perk of this site is you get to get into instantaneous community with other worship leaders, worship planners, worship band leaders, which is a cool website. Sends you stuff once a week, as well as a host of library resources. Many of you probably already know about Planning Center Online, which is a great worship planning and scheduling resource that integrates with CCLI, which is your legality tool that keeps you legal with what you perform and what you copy and things like that. The beauty about Planning Center is it can integrate right to get those, just like all those other sites can. It gets you those charts for you. It keeps a record of how often you sing something. It gets your charts out to your teams, schedules your teams. This has just changed my world. I've been using it for 8 years, and it's awesome. This is one that's more of a worship planning site, but it's called Word to Worship. And it's got a lectionary built into it. But let's say that you're planning worship for a sermon series based on fear, or fear, or overcoming fear, or things like that. I can go up here and type in, if the internet will cooperate. Your search yielded no results. That's
fear.
Awesome.
Try fear.
Yeah. Well, I did the overcoming last week and it worked.
Oh.
So it then brings me up, you know, a host of resources. I don't think I'm logged in right now. But I love it because I have links to CCLI, Song Select, Worship Together, Praise Charts, Music Notes, YouTube, Spotify, and whatever that is. Oh, Lyrics, Lyric Genius. So that's a cool website, whether you're planning a cappella or instrumental, that could be really helpful to you. Let's talk through...
Hey, DJ.
Hey, what?
How many of those are paid sites and how many of those are free?
Most of those have a free version. There's a couple of those that are even new to me. So I don't know the answer to that question, and I apologize. I know there's a free version with Planning Center. There's a free version with Word to Worship. There's a free version with Worship Initiative. But depending on how much you want to get into... So what I would like to do is walk us through a case study of four churches and how they made their transition. Okay.
Too much time.
Okay.
The questions that they ask, that can be really bad.
If I can get the, we'll just do it this way.
It's adjusted. Okay.
My computer has seized up. Want to do a dance or something, David?
Well, what we can tell you, so the resource that DJ has is that one of our colleagues talked with several large churches around the country about their transition into instrumental worship. And they asked them several questions about their process, and they asked all the churches the same question. And so what they ended up with was a really interesting sort of bank of communal wisdom guided by the questions that they asked, but in very diverse contexts. So one of the churches was in Seattle. It's been doing instrumental worship for nearly 20 years. One was Highland here in Abilene, so West Texas Bible Belt, very recent transition. What were the other two that they asked?
Two on the East Coast,
okay.
One on the far Southeast.
Okay. That's right, one in Florida, I think you said.
Yeah.
So as you can imagine then, right, the different social context means that there are some things are going to be the same, some things are going to be different, but the common Church of Christ heritage means that there are going to be some common impulses, right? Some of the things we've talked about today, some of the desires that maybe of people in the congregation, concerns that the elders have, and so they asked them this group of questions and ended up with sort of a nice variety of answers. How you looking? I see movement.
But it's not letting me get out of it.
Okay.
So another one of those tools is ProPresenter. Mm-hmm. And ProPresenter is what I'm trying to use, and it's not letting me escape.
It's a good advertisement for it.
Isn't it though? I'm sure they appreciate that. Anybody know how to escape a presentation from ProPresenter?
Yeah, I shut it down.
We've got your questions on your iPad, don't you?
I no.
Oh, I thought
it, it's not syncing.
Oh.
ACU's Wi-Fi doesn't like me. Students resonate with that?
It's I'm sure it's not personal.
So the question that all of these churches began with as they began to ponder the journey of adding an instrumental service is, what motivated you to add an instrumental service? What's the motivation to add that service? What do you think those answers might be? We've already talked about them. What might motivate you to add an instrumental service?
Outreach.
Outreach? What else?
Attract young people.
Attract young folks. Keep young folks. What about giftedness? Getting close. ProPresenter just reopened.
Being able to sing things that we hear on the radio.
Yep.
People like Christian music, they want to be able to sing that, but it sounds weird a cappella when you try to do it.
Changing our attitudes about instrumental music and realizing it's really not what we thought it was, and being more open.
Yeah, sometimes it has to do with connectedness with other groups. right? We have a history of being rather sectarian in some ways, and being able to have richer and deeper fellowship with other groups of Christians.
All of these churches had a common answer to this question alongside the things that you've mentioned, and that's that in all of these situations, between 10 and 20 years, they had been doing instrumental offerings in other venues besides Sunday morning. So finally it came down to, we have to ask ourselves the question, why is it okay to do it in all these other places, but not on Sunday morning?
Something and like, why can the youth do it on their retreat?
That's exactly what it
is. Why do the college students do it in their Bible class, but not on Sunday morning?
Yep, I love this quote, and it's a language that you used a minute ago. Are we willing to be bilingual in order to meet the greater needs of our community? Bilingual being musical language in the sense. Here's another question. Once the decision was made to consider adding an instrumental service, what process did your church leaders follow? Church on the East Coast answered it this way. Began with a long-term teaching process. 10 years before we ever added the service, we published a paper saying that we didn't believe anything was wrong with doing instrumental music. This is an answer from somebody at Highland. The decision came out of a long conversation about vision. The conversation had been going on for a long time, but action had been tabled to allow things to settle after a strong response to move toward gender equality 10 to 15 years prior to. Conversation of a church in Florida. Our process began with study and conversation. Although there were differing opinions when the process started, eventually all of our leaders were together on our need to add an instrumental service. So once they get to this place, the next step is communication. And that's the most daunting first step for church leaders wanting to make this transition, is how do we communicate how we got here to our congregation? One minister says this: it all began with a lengthy series on evangelism. After the series, we announced that our elders had prayed and studied, and we believed that there were some things we needed to do in order to be effective in outreach, and that we were willing to make some sacrifices in order to do things better. We said we believed a cappella music and limited gender roles were barriers to reaching people. After that announcement, we had a 5-week Bible class taught by one of our elders expanding on our rationale for both issues. At the conclusion of that series, we offered opportunities for people to meet with shepherds for more in-depth conversation. Another church sermon series, followed by help from a church historian on cultural and historical considerations that led to the infamous split between a cappella and instrumental churches. So teaching. Here's an interesting question. How soon after that communication to your congregation was the service launched? One church, 3 months. One church, 6 months. Two other churches, a year. I'm going to pause there for a second, number one, because we're running short on time. But there are a lot of logistical things that you've got to think through and prepare for in thinking through whether or not your church is physically, I guess that's an appropriate word to use there, ready to make that transition. So all four of these churches ended up doing some level of renovation to their stage, to their worship space, to accommodate that move. Most churches that are making the move from a cappella to instrumental aren't ready from a sound system perspective to support all the infrastructure that's needed to add for plugins for different instruments, added microphones, different monitor needs. And so there are very practical and financial considerations that they had to make. But that church, those churches, anywhere from 3 months to a year. Okay, we got 2 minutes left. Why don't we just pause and just open it up?
Yeah, and we know that some of y'all may need to get out, so what we'll say before we open for questions, one is we're going to be able to stay around. We may have to step outside to do so. We're going to continue this conversation tomorrow morning at 8:30, spending a little more time thinking. It's going to be a little less practical, a little more theological. We're going to look at some biblical material about how instrumental worship fits into the larger picture of worship. One of the things that sometimes a cappella folks worry about is, I don't want it to become a performance. I want it to still be able to be worship. And we're going to continue to talk about that at that point. So please feel free to come back, but also to stay and visit with us after. But before we depart, are there things that you want to ask or say publicly?
Do those case studies include end results, like growth end results, participation end results? And the second part B of that question is, can we get that case study?
Here's a few of the results I can share with you. One of those churches has seen significant growth and has been offering an instrumental service now for 5 years. One church, 2 years. Another church has eliminated its a cappella service altogether because they were so full in the instrumental venue they needed to accommodate more, and have been doing that for 13 years.
Wow.
And another, it's been 14 years, and they've added 3 more instrumental services but kept their a cappella offering. I'd be more than happy to talk through some of those other results that I have. I don't have a lot of data.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you guys for coming.